Hi, and welcome to the 11th episode of the Language Meanderings podcast. Today, you can hear that I have a bit of a sore throat, but I am persevering and continuing with these podcasts, and I appreciate all the feedback that I've been getting and all the positive encouragement to continue. I have a question that I've received from one of the members in my language exchange group on Facebook. Her name is Nile from Turkey, and she asks how she can improve her writing. So in this podcast episode, we're going to be discussing some ways that I've seen as a teacher over the past few years, and also as a writer, either with emails, writing stories, fiction, and prose, and texts that I've had to do at the university as well. Just some tips and feedback that I've received over the years, and more recently working as a full-time translator and proofreading texts and trying to improve the communication. So a first few tips that I would like to get into is just what is the English language? English is a subject, verb, object language. There are other languages that have different structures in place that are a little bit more flexible. I've studied Russian, for example, that has declensions for the nouns and the adjectives. And as a result of those declensions, sometimes the structure of the sentence can be a little bit more flexible. Now, another language that also typically follows a subject, verb, object syntax is Spanish and Portuguese, but what I have seen in practice, because I speak Spanish, because I've been speaking Spanish for 20 years now, and translating from Spanish to English for full-time at least 2 years, is that in reality, a lot of times Spanish sentences are very flexible, and they can start with something as simple as the verb and then the subject, or the verb, the object, and then later the subject. And the adverbs can be anywhere in the sentence. And for a translator trying to express the same idea from Spanish into English is sometimes very tricky and requires a lot of restructuring in a sentence. Many times in a Spanish sentence, there can be like a passive expression, a passive voice, and it can be very difficult to express this in English because maybe we need to express the agent. But that's getting into too many details. But suffice to say, if Spanish or Portuguese, for example, are your native languages, you may struggle with writing English in a very simple, organized structure because that language that you speak as a native language is so flexible, it becomes hard to respect a very simple structure as subject, verb, object. And we can continue those sentences with more details about how, where, and when. There's a great exercise that I usually refer to for my students. It's from the Email English book by Paul Emerson. Unit 15 deals with sentence structure. And if you have the book, it's page 36. And they give some clear examples here about how English is a subject, verb, object language. And we want to add details in an order of how, where, when. So an example would be something like, I went by train to London last week. Or sales grew by 50% in New York last year, just as an example. Those would be a little couple examples you might have in like business writing or writing reports or something like that. Getting into some more general details, there's a book I really like called How to Write It by Sandra E. Lam. And in her introduction, she mentions the importance of make your writing simple, clear, and concise. And she also mentions be brief, get to the point. And then you also want to know your message. What is it that you want to communicate to people? Who is your audience? Who is going to be reading your text? Who's going to be reading your document? Why are they going to be reading it? What is the story, the message that you want to convey? And you need to develop your message around your audience. Also make sure you're using a clear, logical progression. You want to kind of flesh out your outline so you can get the details, the big details in place to figure out if you're going to be doing some persuasive writing, for example. You need to kind of get your argumentation in order so that it kind of builds up some momentum and maybe some tension, and that you have like maybe a call to action for your readers. Make sure you write a rough draft and then revise it, edit it. If it doesn't work, simplify it into some of the technical details of the language. Try to use active verbs more frequently than just noun phrases. Also, use synonyms and use very vivid adjectives that are going to be very evocative for a person's imagination. You can get into some of the things like alliteration, play with the sounds of the words as well. That gets into a little more poetry, but it can still be very effective in creative writing. When you're addressing your audience, what do they already know? Make sure you assume nothing. This is a big problem in business correspondence, especially emails, because you get a long thread of an email and then a response and another response and another response. And within 5-10 emails, and if this goes on for a couple of days, a couple of weeks, it may become very confusing to try to follow that thread. And so people might forget certain details that were in one email and then left out in another and then responded to another one. So assume nothing when you're addressing your readers. Try to think, is this the first time they're seeing this document? Is the first time they're seeing this email? Maybe they have forgotten something. So try to help remind a reader of those details if they are important for your message. Also, if something can be misinterpreted, then don't write that. Make it simpler. Make it easy to understand. Also, if you're going to go on a rant and you have something negative to say about something, please don't do that. Try to keep your words positive and optimistic. You never know how this document may, if it's electronic, you don't know if it's going to be stayed, if it's going to stay on record forever almost. And something very negative, very poorly written, could really damage your reputation. Maybe not now, but maybe years from now. Okay, getting a little bit more into the details of your structure. There's another exercise that I've used with students, but this is more for like giving presentations, but it still applies for good writing. This is from the International Express Intermediate book by Liz Taylor in Unit 6, and there's an audio that goes with tips for giving a good presentation. And one of the ideas that I liked was the idea of signposting. And what this was is telling your readers or your listeners what to expect as you're going along, almost as if you were driving on a freeway and you saw a sign that said, 100 miles up ahead is there's this city, 50 miles up ahead there's this city. So you anticipate what is going to be discussed. And as soon as you discuss it, you kind of summarize and get wrap up the key points so people can kind of get that key piece of information and then move on. Another part of signposting is transitioning. So this helps include some kind of structure in your writing so people can see maybe parallel structures. If you're comparing two things, like if you're doing an analysis of why should you buy product A versus product B or service A versus service C, it helps to create a clear, logical structure that people can follow when you're doing the comparison. When I was in the university, there was a book, the Little Brown Book, which was an excellent, like a writing style guide. And there's a lot of great little tips that that I remember, but this was probably back like 16 years ago. I'm getting really old, unfortunately. And there were things about rhetoric, and just one of the things I really liked was this idea of grouping things by threes. People's memory, they like to hold on to things in groups of threes. And when you're doing groups of threes, it also helps to create something logical. So if you're going to compare things or talk about the progression of something over its history or give something in tourism, you may, like for example, with tourism, talk about something locally, then talk about something regionally, and then finally nationally. And that what that creates is something in three-dimensional space that we start small, medium, large. So you kind of build up some momentum and try to apply that whenever possible. I mean, don't abuse it, but it's possible to kind of either start big and work small, but try to create some kind of a spectrum that is logical. Don't just jump around. Your readers will have an easier time understanding what your message is if you have that kind of spectrum in place. Another thing is consistency. I see this very frequently on people's CVs, where they might say what they did in the past, and then the next sentence is a noun structure, and then maybe they switch back to an active verb, or try to be consistent. If you're going to figure out a way to do everything as verbs or everything as nouns, but don't really mix and match. It'll really help the reader just follow your message if it has a predictable structure. And another good place to find good writing is also in kind of good speeches. There's a website I really like. I think it's like AmericanRhetoric.com. I think that's correct. And this has speeches from famous politicians, even presidents. And if you go back in history and you go back to some of the older presidents that we've had in the United States, they have a lot of good writing. Thomas Jefferson, I mean, he wrote the Declaration of Independence. I mean, he's an excellent writer. And there's a lot of things that are in there, just little principles of rhetoric that are good to practice on. There are examples from John Kennedy in his speech, where it's the where he switches the structures of ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country. So taking a structure like that can really turn a concept on its head and force the reader or a listener to kind of rethink an idea. I think also in his inaugurative address, there's the idea of this passing the torch on to the next generation. And those are really vivid images. So whenever possible in your writing, try to include some evocative image that your readers can connect with. If you're going to be doing persuasive writing, don't bury your call to action. You really need to build up to it so that by the time they get to the last paragraph, your audience is really enthusiastic. They've connected with your story. They understand what your goal is here. And then it's just get them to make some simple action and really drive that home. If you're going to be doing something expository, describing how something works or informing somebody about the history of a city or a country or something like that, try to keep a very simple structure in place. Make it interesting. Don't really be boring about it. I mean, even if it's just providing information, you can find clever ways to innovate that writing. And if you're writing something for journalism, make sure you understand the importance of a lead sentence, of trying to get those questions of who, what, when, where. And people say like that the most important thing in writing journalism is that first sentence. it tells basically everything that happened, everything that the reader should know about that event, what happened, who was involved, when it took place. And then little by little, information gets kind of more and more details. But historically, journalists have never known when if they were sending their article over a wire transfer, they never knew if that wire transfer would just suddenly stop. So they wouldn't know if their article would be complete. So they'd have to get as much information at the front of their article as possible. And even still to today, articles can be cut and trimmed. So they try to keep the most important content at the front of that article. And I think that kind of writing style can also help in other documents, like emails. People have, they're bombarded by emails all day long. So you really need to get to your point as quickly as possible. Clarify to your reader, why are you contacting them? What is it that you need them to do? What is it that you need to inform them? Is there a call to action? Do they need to do something? Do they need to call you? Make that clear. Don't let that kind of be ambiguous in your writing. So whatever you are practicing for your writing, make sure you get feedback from other people. I remember when I was in high school, I would always print out my essays, give them to my mother. She would be reading them almost with a fine-tooth comb, and she would be correcting my punctuation. She'd be checking if I had capitalized the important words, that like the language, the proper nouns and things like that. She would be improving certain things in the writing. Maybe I had something in passive voice and it should be better in the active. And even still to this day, when I write my parents an email, I still write to them in an almost very formal way, as if I were writing an article to be published in a newspaper. And I don't know, it's just developed very good habits in my writing style. Also, I see on the internet many times people just, they have very sloppy writing, and they just say, well, that's the way people write on the internet. Get used to it. And I'm like, I don't agree with you. I think there is some value still in good writing and using proper punctuation, using capitalized letters, ending sentences with a period. That's also one thing I learned when I was taking a Spanish class on writing at the Casa Lam in Mexico City. The professor he almost said that most modern writers, they are afraid of using the period. And I see this in English as well. People just end sentences with a comma and think that's okay. So the writing in general is getting very sloppy on the internet. And when I was at the university, other students would give me some of their papers to proofread or to correct. And one thing that I did notice is that people would have a very conversational tone. They would use slang words that were basically very inappropriate in a collegiate level of writing. So if I go into another detail here, it would be to say, in the history of the English language, if you go back to 1066 with William the Conqueror in his invasion and taking over the throne of England, what he did was he brought French and basically Latin, because the literati, the notaries, the religious, the clerics and the people at the court, all of these literate people, they understood and spoke French. They were well-versed in Latin. So their writing was heavily influenced by those two languages. And the language of the common people, Anglo-Saxon, over the years developed into these very short phrasal verb kind of structures and just very simple words. And the English language, as a result, in modern day, is basically two languages. We have a very conversational, short words that we generally use in conversational English, And we use more of these formal words that are coming from Latin, from Greek, from French, and that sound more formal and sound more educated. And most native speakers have to go to the university, have to go to the high school to start learning more of those vocabulary words. And when they get to the university, it's a good sign that they have a very good level of writing when they're using that level of vocabulary. And when somebody is using just very informal words, that's slang, it comes across as being not as polished or not as well written as it could be. And it may be more appropriate for kind of a conversational blog post or something in a very easy to read magazine. But for a level of at the university, it's important to start moving your writing to that formal style. And that's also applicable to if you're preparing for a test like the TOEFL or for the IELTS or even for business correspondence of like the TOEIC. It's a very good idea to really try to improve your writing style. And in addition to getting this feedback from other people, you can go online to websites like italki.com, lang8.com, or govolubo.com, and you can submit a text and you can try to get feedback from native speakers or from other learners of that language. In general, in my general practice, I try to keep some of my writing a lot shorter because I think some people, they see a really long text and they get scared and they just decide not to correct it if there are many mistakes. So if you keep a shorter text, maybe one or two paragraphs, there's more likelihood that somebody is going to make the effort to correct your writing. And also make sure to thank those people if they do correct your writing and try to return the favor of correcting that person's writing if possible, if they're studying your language, if you're doing kind of a language exchange situation. But overall, there's many, many, many ways to improve your writing, but it all boils down to practice. The more you practice writing, the better your writing is going to get. It's just anything you do in life, if you don't do anything, you're not going to get any results. So just write a little bit each day, practice. Today your writing might be terrible, but tomorrow might be a little bit better, and the day after that even better. But you'll never know if you don't implement this idea and this strategy to just try to do a little bit each day. And it's not a problem if you notice that it's bad. It's always possible to edit and revise the text. But if you don't write, you're not going to get practice. So it's very important to be writing on a regular basis and to get that feedback. And if you recognize that you have difficulty with grammar or with spelling, go find resources that will help you improve your grammar, improve your spelling, and just keep practicing and be relentless with finding that kind of support of either resources or feedback, and try to get published. Don't be afraid of, like, if you are very proud of your work, try to get opportunities where somebody might want to publish this piece of work. Or if you like blogging or writing for the internet, see if you could do a guest host writing on somebody else's blog. This might be a good way where you can get more readers and you might get feedback from other people. But yeah, definitely don't just keep your writing for yourself. Make sure you're writing this for an audience. And just, yeah, whatever kind of writing style you're doing, persuasive writing, expository writing, informative writing, just make sure you practice as much as you can and get feedback and just keep improving, and you'll see great results. So those are some of my tips for today for improving your writing. I hope you have found some of this useful. And as always, if you would like to take an English class with me or hear more about my language meanderings, you can visit my website at hugginsinternational.com. That's HUGGINS international.com. Or you can send me an email at hugginsinternational@gmail.com. Thank you very much for listening, and I look forward to the next podcast.